And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. And another beautiful day. Boy, how many days in a row have we had? It's been a great autumn so far, hasn't it? Yeah. I was talking with my colleague Kate this morning. You just wonder how much longer Mother Nature is going to let us go before she puts the hammer down. I don't know. I don't know how much longer we can expect this sort of weather. It's unbelievable. It really is. And, you know, we've had it most all of September and most all of October. And here we are, October 20th. We're about 2 weeks away from changing the clocks. We will do that 2 weeks from Sunday, first Sunday in November. It's been a very, very strange autumn weather-wise. We're not complaining. It's been beautiful. Just strange. And then no foliage. Do you have any around your place? Huh. Open talk to begin the program today. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. We'll have guests later, as I told you yesterday. I'm going to be talking today with Pauline Dakin. A true story about her life, her childhood in particular, when for several years her mother would periodically pack up Pauline and her younger brother. She has a brother that's like 2 years younger. And they lived in Canada. And they would suddenly leave and go to another city. Her mother told her they were being pursued by the Canadian Mafia. And it wasn't true. And it took Pauline quite a while, even after she was an adult, to finally figure out what was going on. It was quite a mystery. And we'll talk to her about it. It's a true story. It's not made up. Pauline will visit with us. And then on the final segment of the program today, we'll talk about cancer with Laura Holmes Haddad. She is a cancer survivor. And she's written a book that is of great interest to people who are cancer survivors, who are battling cancer, family members, caregivers. It's called This Is Cancer, Everything You Need to Know. So it's a compact book, but it's got a lot of info in it. We'll talk to Laura Holmes Haddad later on the program today as well. So that's the lineup of guests for a Friday. Open talk to begin with, 283-2525. 283-2525. So what about foliage? Do you have any color around your house? I've seen practically none. And I've driven around a little bit, too. I mean, I haven't just been, you know, hanging around within 10 miles of the city of Butler. I was in Pittsburgh last weekend. I've been up north. I just don't see much. Occasionally, there's been a bright tree. And that's about it. There are a couple of what I call signature trees in the neighborhood, and I'm sure everybody has those. There's the tree that always turns before everything else, right? Everybody has one of those in their town or their neighborhood. There was one when I was a child in the small town where I spent my elementary school years, Parker. There was a tree, a maple tree, right along the main street, Lawrenceburg Hill, as it was called. And that tree was the first tree to change color every single year. It was obviously some kind of special species of maple. And it would turn red and orange. It was beautiful. And there would be no other trees whatsoever that had even started to change yet. I don't know whether that tree is still there or not. I don't know. But there are a couple of those signature trees in my neighborhood, and they didn't do anything this year. One of them turned kind of a dull red like brick, you know, like terracotta. And then all the leaves fell off. That was that. And that was a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know. I haven't seen any reports from... Penn State has a great forestry department. It's a great school of forestry up there, actually. And they issued a report back in early September that predicted great foliage because at that time we had had perfect conditions. A lot of rain early in the summer and everything looked great. And then it just stopped. We didn't get much rain at all in September. We haven't had a great deal in October either. So they changed that, by the way. They said, sorry, we have to change that forecast about the brilliant foliage because it's not going to happen. Well, I not only have seen non-brilliant. I've seen, if you drive up the Route 422 bypass, you know, that skirts around Butler, and there are several places there where there are big valleys, big gorges. Trees are all green. Kind of a murky, dark green, but they're all green. Very strange. Surely they've had the Clarion Autumn Leaf Festival by now, right? I don't know. They have that earlier and earlier every year. They might as well move it to the 4th of July if we're going to be so late into the year without any foliage color. Somebody said, because I mentioned this about a month ago to somebody, a golfing partner actually, and he said, hang on, you're rushing the gun. We don't usually get our beautiful, rich foliage until, you know, about 10 days or so into October. Well, thanks, Jack, for that advice. Probably true, by the way, but not this year. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk. 283-2525 is the number. I want to talk about a couple of things that are happening in Washington. But I do want to, first of all, on a... I have to apologize to Carl Jackson. I've been trying to get to this story for a couple of days, and we've just been running out of time. Carl had emailed me because we were talking last week, maybe early this week, I don't remember, about the Ground Observer Corps back in the 50s and 60s, volunteers who used to listen for planes. You know, this was at the height of the Cold War. And I remembered one of these stations up near where I lived at the time. It was up between Foxburg and St. Petersburg. We had several calls from listeners who said that they had been volunteers. One lady said her sister, her older sister, was a volunteer. And that lady said it was in the 40s. So they must have started those even during World War II. Well, anyway, I thank very much Carl Jackson because he said he was one. He was one of those volunteers. Ground Observer Corps. They had a book, when they heard a plane, they had to try to identify it, and a book they'd flip through, see if they could identify the plane. He said, we thought the Russians were coming any minute at that time. Hmm. But then, Carl went on to, because we were talking about something else last week, the old wheel works in Butler, which was located right adjacent to Pillow Street. In fact, to be honest with you, it was almost right across the street from where our WISR studios are right now. It was kind of on the edge of the old Pullman complex, you know, the Pullman Standard rail car complex. And they made wheels there for railroad cars. And we were talking about it, and I was wanting to know when it disappeared, and the building's not there anymore. And we had folks called in, said they were working there as late as the 60s and even 70s, long after Pullman Standard closed. And then we were talking about how did we get into the axles. Oh, I said there was another company that remained even after Pullman went out of business, and they'd even torn down some of the Pullman buildings, I believe. And a listener refreshed my memory. It was Allegheny Axle was the name of the company. And they made axles for railroad cars. And then we had another caller who talked about the ball bearings and so on. And then Carl was just full of knowledge about how they kept axles and rail car wheels from wearing out before they had ball bearings. And Carl says they had a system called journal boxes. Never heard that phrase before. Journal boxes. And he says, and I'm reading from his email, this was a box around the end of the axle with a flip-up lid. It had fiber waste from fabric factories in it and oil that lubed a sleeve-type bearing. So because, you know, you got a steel axle and you got a steel wheel on a railroad car. And you can imagine the stress. You know, how does it keep from being destroyed? Well, before they had ball bearings, they used this system. The car inspectors had to check the oil in each wheel, and they carried an oil can with a long spout to do this. They would flip the lid up, and if they needed a little oil in there on that waste fabric, they'd squirt some in there, and they'd move on. And Carl says, his father did this. His father did this. Wow. He also says this is the reason, one of the reasons that we had a caboose on trains back in those days. There were guys who rode up in the crow's nest of the caboose to watch for what they called hot boxes. When a journal box would go dry and would start to smoke and catch fire. So they'd have to quickly stop the train. The conductor would run up with a oil can and give it a couple of squirts and off they'd go. After ball bearings came around, Carl says, cabooses generally were the thing of the past. And they didn't really need them anymore. So thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. And I'm sorry it took me so long. It was a rather lengthy email that he sent me, and it was full of wonderful information, and I just wasn't able to get to all of it. So thank you very much. I think when I was a kid and I had a model train set that we would set up at Christmas time under the Christmas tree, I think I had a little guy in a caboose with a, you know, one of those oil men. Had a oil can with a long spout that they'd used to oil up the journal boxes. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. 283-2525 is the number, and part of our history here in Butler, too, you know, where we made rail cars, and we made wheels for them, and we made axles for them. And what a shame that we still don't have the rail system that we had 40 and 50 years ago. Wouldn't that be great if we still had that for mass transit and everything else? 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Did anybody hear? I got a thing from, I'm sure a lot of you listeners are, if you're not members of AARP yet, you soon will be, because they start sending you letters when you're like 47 years old. Please consider joining AARP. It's a big organization. They have a lot of weight. And I had received a letter, I don't know when this came, sometime this summer. And it was a warning. It says, we're very concerned about a major threat to your Medicare benefits and pocketbook. Now, not all members of AARP are on Medicare, but some are, older folks. And it says, as we write this, our elected leaders in Washington, D.C. are making moves that could open the door for potential cuts to Medicare. And I didn't know whether they were just crying wolf or, you know, what the story was. So I put it in a file just in case. And sure enough, yesterday the Senate passed this budget framework. It's very complex. I don't understand the details of it, but they needed this to clear the way for this big tax reform plan that President Trump wants to see approved, and that obviously many Republicans in Congress want to put through. But now, according to Chuck Schumer, and Bernie Sanders, this budget contains incredible cuts to Medicare. Cuts to Medicare. Now, is that going to happen? I thought Trump, when he was running last year, promised that he wasn't going to touch Medicare. We're going to protect Medicare and Social Security. So I think there's a lot of folks who are going to be following this pretty closely. Yeah, they plan to cut taxes. But, you know, if you cut taxes, you got to cut some spending, too. And this is what I'm hearing out of Washington, D.C. So I'm going to keep my eyes and ears open. And I'm sure a lot of you are, especially you folks who are, you know, are already enrolled in Medicare or are Social Security beneficiaries. Social Security benefits are going up 2% in the new year. That was announced last week. It averages about $25 a month for the average Social Security recipient, about $25 a month. I don't know whether that'll be wiped out by increases in your Medicare payments or not. I don't know. But it is the largest increase in several years, because there have been just tiny fractional increases in Social Security benefits for the past few years. So we'll see. I have this letter here that I got from ARP, AARP. Maybe they were onto something. I don't know. General Kelly appeared in the White House briefing room yesterday, and this was in the wake of the flap over President Trump calling the wife of one of the four servicemen who died in Niger in Africa. Why do we have troops in Niger anyway? Who knows? I don't know. But anyway, four guys died a couple of weeks ago. And I just heard on the CBS News this morning here on WISR that the FBI has now become involved in investigating just what happened there. Were they not prepared? I guess one of the service personnel who died, his body wasn't even recovered until 2 days after the incident. So the FBI is looking into it. Anyway, President Trump called, apparently, next of kin of all four of these servicemen. But the one that made news was the woman who was on her way to Florida to meet the plane bringing her husband's body back. And there was a congresswoman from Florida who was with her in the car, Frederica Wilson. I'd never heard of her before. And she says she heard the conversation and then she went public with it. My first reaction to that was, goodness gracious, don't you think that should be a private thing? No. You know, whether or not Trump said the right thing or not, that's a different story. But don't you think that should be that was my first reaction. Don't you think that should be private? And that's what General Kelly said yesterday, too. He said, that should be a private thing. And this man lost his own son in Afghanistan about 6 years ago. What do you think? 283-2525 is the number. And should the president make a personal phone call to wives or parents of service personnel who are killed? Some people say, no, it's not a good idea. Okay, let's get to the people here before we go any further. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk, 283-2525. Caller, thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
No, hi, Dave.
Hi.
Listen to your show all the time. It's a great show.
Oh, thank you.
I just had a comment to make. You know, and I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. It's nothing political on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter what Trump does, they find some kind of fault with him, no matter what he does. If he gave us all $1 million today, it would be wrong. You know, and I get so sick and tired of these people dividing our nation. We're divided. Now, this is something so stupid to be talking about, you know, and I'm just disgusted with what they're doing to Trump. And I'm not a Trump. I did not vote for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first heard this
story,
when this story first developed, and it was three or four days ago, you know, my first reaction was, I don't have any personal experience here, but my first thought was, how could the president be expected to make a personal phone call to the relatives of every serviceman who died? I mean, things have cooled down a little bit.
Why was she listening in?
Well, She said it was a
speaker. They want to divide the blacks and the whites here in America, and they're doing a heck of a good job on it.
Well, regardless of whether she was listening in or not, it just that's not the sort of thing that should go public, I don't think.
Oh, I agree with you,
it's a private conversation, for goodness
right,
sakes.
Right. And here they are making a big story out of it. Mm-hmm. Anything to discredit Trump, no matter what he does. But that's my story, and thanks for your program.
That's what we do here. Good to talk with you today.
Okay, Dave.
Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Bye. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Open talk here on the It's Your Turn program today. By the way, Dave Ross, commentator for CBS Radio, also talked about these potential cuts in Medicare and Medicaid on his commentary this morning on WISR. That appears to be what's in the cards with this budget plan and tax reform plan that is being pushed. And, boy, it's right along party lines. This budget framework passed the Senate yesterday by a vote of 51 to 49. All the Republicans voted for it, and all the Democrats voted against it. Strictly along party lines. I never liked to see that. I didn't like to see it when the Affordable Care Act was passed 8 years ago, when it was all Democrats who voted for it and all Republicans who voted against it. I'm just not keen on that. There's never been a political candidate yet that I have agreed with totally. There's never been a platform or an issue where I agreed with someone 1,000%. You know, I mean, I think that's unrealistic. How can one party always be right and the other party always be wrong? I mean, it's nonsensical. But nobody wants to budge, huh? Nobody wants to compromise and give a little bit one way or the other. There is a Facebook game that's sweeping through the United Kingdom. I heard about this on CBS Radio here on WISR this morning. It's called the 48-hour challenge. And what happens is young people go missing for 2 days, 48 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours. They drop out. They make no contacts on social media, no phone calls. Kids don't make phone calls anymore these days anyway. No texting, nothing. They disappear, and then 48 hours later, they surface. One report said one kid, when he was being brought back by the police, sent pictures, posted pictures of him in the police cruiser on his Facebook account. Why? This just astonishes me that people have the time to piddle around with this sort of... It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Parents going crazy. Our kids disappear for 48 hours, 2 days, no trace, no nothing. I don't know whether they've been kidnapped, assaulted, killed. Who knows? Beaten up somewhere? Nuts. Absolutely nuts. In the United Kingdom is where it's going on, at least according to the report today. I haven't heard about it in the U.S. Don't you wish you could just drop out for 48 hours sometimes when you get so busy that your head's spinning and you don't know how you're going to get everything done in a day that you need to get done, or whatever, the errands you have to get done, the cleaning, the work. Yeah. 283, I guess you can go on Facebook and take the 48-hour challenge, see if anybody can find you. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Open talk on the program today. The Butler Township Police, say they have two individuals who are responsible for those bomb threats last month at Butler Intermediate High School. One is a 15-year-old boy responsible for two separate bomb threats, two different days. The other being charged is a 12-year-old girl, 12, responsible for a bomb threat at the intermediate school. Police say she wrote it on a bathroom wall. What do you do with these kids? I don't know. what tremendous inconvenience, cause for concern. The schools were evacuated in each case. By the way, there's still one that has not been solved. They had four different threats just last month at Butler Intermediate. So what do you do with these kids? Are they old enough to realize the severity of what they did? I don't know. Today's kids, pretty savvy, I would think, especially someone, this boy that's 15 years old. He certainly ought to be old enough to know better. Do you kick them out of school? Expel them? I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can permanently expel for in a situation like this. Maybe temporarily, a couple of days, or you're going to throw them in jail? Can't do that. There's no facility that'll... Well, I guess what we used to call reform school back in the day. Juvenile detention facility. What about the girls? 12 years old. 12-year-old girl. Bomb threat. I don't know. Is it because of parents who have no idea what their kids are doing or have not taught them basic morality, or parents who are not there and just gone, don't care? I don't know. But what a disruption, you know. Are they ostracized by other students? I'm sure the other students know the names. I'm sure the names get out. You know, they weren't released to the news media because they're both minors. You know, people say, well, throw the book at him. What's the book? What do you do? Because I understand it, it's state law that everyone has a right to public education. So maybe you can suspend them for a while, but a lot of people say, well, permanently expel them. I don't think you can do that. 28325, I mean, that might send a message, but I think under state law you're not allowed to do that. That's what I'm talking about. 283-2525, our number, open talk on the program today. 283-2525. Oh, by the way, I just finalized an interview. It's next Friday. It's a week from today. There is a Butler native who now lives in Florida. In fact, she's lived there for quite a long time. But she's written a novel. I don't know what it's about yet because I haven't seen it. But it's set in Butler. And it has all sorts of references to things that used to be here in Butler. References to all things like the hot dog shop, the courthouse, what used to be the yellow brick junior high school building. It's not there anymore. And lots of other stuff, too. Her name is Beth Brown. Beth Brown. She lives in Florida. She's going to be back home in her hometown next weekend, and she's going to stop in and chat with us. So I was pleased to be able to set that up. Just found out from my friend Eric Bell, who's the manager at the Book Nook on Main Street, North Main Street, downtown. She's going to be putting in a personal appearance there, I think. Probably signing books and stuff. But we'll find out about that when she visits with us. I just talked to her on the phone this morning. I do not know her, but she sounded like a lovely person. And it's always kind of nice, huh? To have a book that includes things about your hometown. So we'll look forward to chatting with Beth Brown next week. By the way, Monday is a book talk day. Slippery Rock Community Library has chosen a newer novel by Sherry Lapina. Sherry Lapina. It's called The Couple Next Door. And it's a story about a missing infant. An infant that goes missing. This is not... This is not 48 hours of Facebook game. This is a little baby. Turns up missing. The reviews are somewhat mixed about it. One reviewer said, kind of like Gone Girl, which was the huge hit of, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago? Gone Girl came out. There have been a number of novels since then that have kind of used that that model and had some success. So I have I've just started to read it. I'm going to be reading it over the weekend. And I'll, as always, let you know what I think. We'll talk about it with guests from the Slippery Rock Community Library on Monday. Book talk for this month. The Couple Next Door. Sherry LaPina. We have lots of other stuff going for you next week as well, in addition to the couple of things we've mentioned already. So it's shaping up to be a pretty exciting week, I think. On It's Your Turn next week, and we'll have guests with us from the Pittsburgh Philharmonic. That orchestra is going to be performing here in Butler. We're also going to be chatting. We have a tentative interview set with Jim Roddy. You know Jim Roddy? Former Allegheny County Chief Executive. They don't have county commissioners down there anymore. They have a chief executive. So he's scheduled to visit with us next week as well, and some other stuff. Okay, I'm going to take a break here because it's almost time for us to hook up with our first guest today, Pauline Dakin, who lives in Canada. I think Pauline has lived in Canada all of her life. Certainly her childhood was there because that's where she had all these weird things happen to her. She and her brother were moved around all over the place. Her mother told her that they were being pursued by the mafia, and they had to kind of like, you know, go into the witness protection program. And turned out to be not true, by the way. And this is not something that Pauline made up. Pauline is a well-known journalist, news person for the CBC. It's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. So, you know, she's believable. It's a pretty incredible story that she shares with us, and that'll be coming up here in just a moment or so on the It's Your Turn program today. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. You know, they just celebrated their 125th anniversary. 125 years. 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler. You think about that. Go back 125 years. Think about what was happening in this country at that time. And Miller's Shoes, still there. Still that big smile from the Cyprians when you go in the door. Still that great, that famous Miller's fit. That wonderful selection and that great price, too. And the selection is incredible. These are names of shoes that you've heard of. Rockports. They sell Rockports there. Great shoe. Trotters, Timberland, shoes and boots, top-notch. In terms of athletic shoes, oh gosh, they've got pretty much all your famous brands there at Miller's. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, A6, Pro Pet, got them all right there. Under one roof, no need to go around to 2, 3, 4 stores. They always have lots of shoes that are on racks, sale price too. You can very quickly browse through something that catches your eye. And also, never forget this. Miller's Shoes is your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes, America's favorite comfort shoe, made in the U.S. of A, down in Texas. SAS Shoes, a variety of styles and colors for men and women, sandals too. They are really, really, really comfortable. Slip a pair on at Miller's. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating 125 years in business. Miller's Shoes.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
We have a true crime story to tell you about. Coming up on the next segment, listeners, of It's Your Turn today. My name is Dave Malarkey, and our guest visits with us by telephone. She is Pauline Dakin, author of Run, Hide, Repeat, a memoir of a fugitive childhood. First of all, Pauline, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Nice to be with you.
And what a fascinating story that you tell in your book. Listeners, a little bit about Pauline Dakin. She is a former journalist and news producer for the CBC. That's the Canadian Broadcasting Company. She's currently an assistant professor at the University of King's College School of Journalism in Halifax. Halifax, that's Sidney Crosby territory up there, Nova Scotia, right?
That's exactly right. He's just across the harbor from us.
Oh, wow. Wow. I don't have to tell you how popular he is here in western Pennsylvania, that's for sure.
For sure. And he parades through town with the Stanley Cup once in a while.
Wow.
It's pretty fun.
Wow. So just a thumbnail sketch of your story. You spent many of your childhood years on the run. Your mother told you that you were running from the mafia, and you were only alive due to the protection from a covert anti-organized crime force. So my first question, Pauline, is, did you really spend your childhood on the run from the mafia?
Well, so just so you know, that's what I was told when I was 23. I wasn't aware. I knew that strange things were happening in my family, and that twice we had just disappeared, moved away, not told anybody we were leaving. But in fact, from my adult perspective and having done some research and so on, no, we weren't actually on the run from the mafia.
Mm-hmm. But you were on the run for much of your childhood, eh?
That's right. So the background is that my parents divorced when my brother and I were quite young, and my mother had a deep depression coming out of that marriage, and she went to Al-Anon, the support group for the families of alcoholics. My mm-hmm. dad was alcoholic, mm-hmm. and they recommended she go see a fellow named Stan Sears, who did counseling. He was a United Church minister, and he was a counselor for Al-Anon, and she went to see him and, in fact, started to feel better. Working at his church as a secretary, and then his family and my family became close friends. And then we started going camping together, and that's when the really strange things started happening. Dave, we would sort of, on a spur of a moment, suddenly take off for a day. And even if it was a school day and I was missing a test, which just seemed bizarre. And sometimes, you know, I would come home and we'd get rushed out of the house. We got to go. And the excuse would be, well, maybe the furnace isn't working. And then late, when we did sort of disappear those two times, Stan Sears and his wife moved with us, which always seemed strange to my brother and I.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, when I was told this story about the mafia, it was a, you know, bizarre and crazy story, but it did make all of those pieces fall into place.
Wow. There's a picture, a photograph on the cover of your book, Pauline, Run, Hide, Repeat. Is that actually you and your brother, or is that just a picture that the publisher put on the cover?
No, that's actually me and my brother. He would have been about 3 or 4, and I would have been 5 or 6. We were on beautiful Raftriever Beach on Vancouver Island in British Columbia.
Wow. Folks, this story, and if what you've heard so far, if it sounds, you know, like a psychological thriller, well, it is, except it's true. That's the most amazing part. Did you say you were in your mid-20s before you began to suspect the truth here, Pauline?
Well, I was 23 when I was told the story, and it was sort of, you know, I had times when I was, you know, believing it and very caught up in it and, you know, would have to run once in a while. And there were very bizarre stories that were a part of that. One time my car was stolen, and, of course, the story was, well, yeah, the mafia people had stolen it looking for things in it, those kinds of things. But there were times I sensed inconsistencies in this story, and it was in my late 20s that I finally felt, I can't live with this anymore, I must know. And it's very hard to determine the reality of something that is so secret, this organization that Stan was supposedly involved with that was protecting us, you know, was so secret that there was no way to, like, who are you going to ask? How are you going to see if this is real? So I set up a bit of a test, a sting kind of, where I called my mother and said, my house has been broken into. What should I do? And she said, oh, okay, well, I'll ask our friends and get back to you. And, of course, she talked that way because we didn't, you couldn't name names on phone lines in case they were bugged. And so I sat for a few excruciating moments waiting for her to call me back. And she called back and she said, yes, two men, our friend says that two men had broken into your house. They were looking for certain things. They were parked down the road when we picked them up. They had photographs of you in the car. They've been following you for weeks. And, of course, I knew immediately our friend Stan, who had conveyed this information, that whole thing was a hoax because I'd made up the break-in, and he used that to sort of bolster his mafia story. So I knew none of it was true, and it was a really devastating moment.
You were 29 at the time, or late in your late 20s. 28. So you weren't living with your mother anymore. You were living on your own, but in the same town or something?
Yes. Yeah, by this time, when they told me this story, we lived in different cities. And at that point, she said the reason that she was telling me the story when I was 23 was that she had decided to go inside, meaning going into protective custody, and that she had said she wouldn't do that without telling me first. So I was waiting for her to go inside and disappear again, so I moved to the same city where she was so that I could have time with her before she disappeared. But as things went along, there were all these delays for her disappearance because, oh, well, there were threats that if she disappeared, bad things would happen to her rest of her family on the West Coast. So there were always delays and excuses why she didn't go.
So, and I'm not totally familiar with the geography of Canada, but I know enough that Nova Scotia, Halifax, and Vancouver are on opposite ends of the continent, for goodness sakes. That's a long ways off.
Yeah, the first time we disappeared, we went from Vancouver on the West Coast to Winnipeg on the prairies. And then the second time, we went from Winnipeg to St. John, New Brunswick, also on the East Coast.
Listeners, we have a few more minutes, fortunately, that we're able to... It's almost a breathtaking story, isn't it? A few more minutes to talk with Pauline Dakin, author of, it's a new book, paperback, just published. It's called Run, Hide, Repeat, a memoir of a fugitive childhood. We take a quick break. We'll be back to talk more with Pauline here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 South of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Butler Health System is more than a community hospital. It's a community of expertise trusted by our neighbors across the region. For renowned surgeon Dr. Tony Maloof, that means his neighbors are connected to a modern network of exceptional care.
While I'm part of a very close-knit group, I'm also a part of something bigger. Every day, I can see the difference this makes for my patients and for me.
But in its heart, Butler Health System retains the genuine caring of a community hospital, where patients are treated like friends and neighbors, because that's exactly who they are. And for orthopedic surgeon Thomas Mazzanegro, that caring is where it all begins.
We're committed to providing the absolute best care, and that means understanding what's important in the lives of our patients.
At BHS, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Welcome back. Just joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. That's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest chats with us on the telephone. She is Pauline Dakin, author of Run, Hide, Repeat, a memoir of a fugitive childhood. So let's pick up the story. You set up this sting, which was brilliant, by the way. So you realized that obviously something was up, but you know, who do you go to? Who could you ask to tell you the truth? Did you convince your mother to tell you? Was there some other family member who knew?
No. So you know, it was my discovery that the whole thing had been a hoax, and I confronted my mother, and then I confronted Stan. And their reaction, no, they did not say, oh, yeah, you got us, that's the truth. What they said was, oh, we're really sorry and really worried that you no longer believe this, because we think that maybe you'll put yourself in danger or in harm's way if you reject your protection, you know, the people that were supposedly following me around and making sure I was safe. So that was their response. So I didn't know what to do with it. My brother went to the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which is our federal police system, and they said, no, there's not a thing we can do about this. So then, you know, we had decided that my mother was not deliberately trying to deceive us, that she, that the story was Stan's, and she was simply believing him. And she did. She believed him until the day she died.
Wow. Your brother, of course, would have been a young adult by this time as well, because he was only couple of years younger than you, right? Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
I have to tell you, Pauline, I can understand you going to your mother and, you know, kind of begging her to tell the truth, but I would be a little bit afraid of Stan under those circumstances. He sounds a little shady. I don't know whether I'd go to him or not.
You know, the really interesting thing, Dave, is that Stan had become like a dad to me, and he was the most caring, gentle person. He was a good person, and, you know, he did good works in the community. He was well-respected. I never did fear him, but I did feel there, you know, I couldn't understand, why is he deceiving my family? What could he possibly get out of this? And it wasn't until just a few years ago, when I had started doing research for this book, that I finally had a real aha moment about what had been going on. And it really just revolutionized my thinking about what my family had been through. I'm happy, you know, this is the kind of story, I think, that that it's okay to give away some of the plot details, because I think the interest is in other things. So I'm happy to tell you what was going on, if you think your audience would like to know.
No, I would love it, because this is different from Agatha Christie folks, Murder Mystery, where she puts all sorts of red herrings in there and so on and so forth. This really happened. This is a harrowing true story. So I would be... There's a couple of questions first. You said Stan was married. His wife used to go with you on some of these trips. Was she still around?
Yeah. She was, but at some point after he retired, he told us that he had gone inside and was working with this sort of shadowy anti-organized crime task force, and that she chose not to go inside, so they were separated. And at that point, part of the story that my mother told me was part of the reason she wanted to go inside into protective custody was so that she and Stan could be together. They had fallen in love.
I kind of suspected that. That's why I asked whether his wife was still around.
Yeah.
And, of course, your mother was divorced.
That's right. In reality, though, Dave, I have since tracked down Stan's surviving son, and Stan never did leave his wife, Sybil. He lived with her until the day he died, but he would disappear for periods of time, and that would have been when he was with my mother.
So how did you finally, Pauline Dakin, how did you finally discover the truth?
Well, I was working on this book, which I decided I wanted to write initially because my children were getting older. I wanted to be able to tell them what had happened to us, but in a more kind of complex and nuanced way. They really loved their grandma, and I didn't want them to be angry with her. So that's why I started writing it. And then I was doing some research, and I came across an article in a medical journal, and it talked about what it described as a very rare condition called delusional disorder. And as I read about it, the lights were just coming on for me. And what distinguishes this from other kinds of major mental illness is that people who have this don't have other symptoms that kind of give it away. So if you see somebody with schizophrenia, you know, they have certain things about them that tips you off something's wrong. That's not true with delusional disorder. So these people can live completely normal lives. And like Stan and my mother, have responsible jobs, be respected in the community, but in this little envelope of their life, there is this delusion going on. And he had a couple of subtypes going on. One was grandiose, which is, you know, how he had all this secret information that nobody else had about this mafia group and so on. And the other was, you know, paranoid. He was paranoid that people were coming after him. And all of it fit. And so I called the guy who wrote the article, who is a psychiatry professor and researcher at Harvard University, and we had a long conversation, and he confirmed that he believed that this was the diagnosis and referred me to another psychiatrist who's considered one of the world experts who, wait for it, you won't believe this, actually lives in my town and teaches at my university.
Wow.
And he also confirmed it. So the effect of that for me, Dave, was just like dropping loads of weight to know that there had not been, that Stan had never really meant to harm my family, that he really did care about us, and he thought he was protecting us. He really, truly believed the stories he was telling us.
Now, have the experts, they're referring just to Stan when they talk about this delusional disorder. They don't think that your mother suffered from this as well?
No, they believe that, I think my mother was maybe uniquely vulnerable to Stan's story. My mother had been abused by her father and her husband, and then she goes for counseling to this man who is very gentle, who respects her, and she was a very intellectual person, and he really respected that in a way that nobody else had before. So I think what the experts are suggesting is maybe it was a case of folie à deux, where one more kind of dominant personality has a terrible delusion like this, and the other person sort of believes it. It gets pulled into it.
Are all of the principals now deceased, your mom, Stan, and Sybil?
Yes, they are, yeah. And my dad, too, my real dad, who, by the way, I'd been told was involved with the mafia, and he wasn't. So we did reestablish contact later in his life, and got to know each other again.
So as we near the end of our time together here, I'm kind of agog at this story, to be honest with you. It's amazing. I think that it's true. When all of these travels that you took, was it always within Canada? You never ventured south into the United States?
In fact, you know, we were often warned not to cross the border because of difficulties for the people who protected us getting back and forth across the border. Although when I was growing up, I did spend a lot of time in Washington State. Before my parents split up, we had a cottage at Point Roberts, and I have very happy memories of Point Roberts.
So let's talk about resolution. You found out the truth. Have you learned how to come to terms with this whole thing that happened? Have you learned to try to think back and forgive the people involved here?
I think I really have. You know, this revelation about the delusional disorder allowed me to stop hating Stan for what he'd done to my family. And the process of writing the book allowed me to, you know, put it into some kind of a narrative that made some sense to me and also, you know, allowed me to finally forgive all of the things that happened. I mean, it all came out of people's weaknesses of some kind. You know, for Stan, maybe it was some kind of brain damage. They don't know what caused it, but maybe some kind of brain damage or something. And for my mother, it was really kind of an emotional weakness, in the sense that she was so vulnerable because she'd had such horrible experiences in her life. And this person finally treated her kindly.
And there was no criminality involved here. I mean, obviously, your brother contacted the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Authorities said this is bizarre, cruel, in fact, perhaps to you, but there's no criminality here?
No, because my mother was an adult and she could make choices. And it's interesting because I think about if that were to happen today in a world where there is social media and we are all so connected, it would be... And also, I think there's a different sensibility around maybe community responsibility for children. I think people would be much more likely to say, hey, something weird's going on with that family. Why did they disappear? Maybe we should look for them.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that back then.
So, obviously, you had the bad feelings against Stan. Did you ever blame your mother at all?
Oh, yes. I was very angry at her for a long time. And, you know, we had a difficult time having a relationship. We'd been very close, and that changed. And I was very happy after I had children because it gave us a way to be together where we weren't constantly trying to convince each other of the truth or untruth of our respective stories. So we never got back to our really close relationship. But when she was dying, she came to live with me, and she acknowledged how I must have hated her. If I didn't believe it, I must have hated her. And I said to her, Mom, I never hated you. I was sure mad at you, but I've always loved you. And we were able to come to some kind of agreement to disagree and an understanding that regardless of everything, you know, we still loved each other. But it's really been since I've written this book, and she died in 2010, but I sort of had the sense that somehow she knows. I often had the sense she was kind of looking over my shoulder as I was writing this book. Mm. So I feel as though, I don't know, we've reached a better place, even though she's gone.
What about your brother? Is he okay after this ordeal?
He is, although, you know, I've spent a few years now kind of deeply thinking about this and remembering and writing. And I said, I'm going to do this, Ted. What do you think? You can read it before I send it to anyone. He said, no, I trust you. Go ahead and write it. And I said, but it's your story, too. He said, no, I'll read it when it's published.
Mm.
So he just finished reading it in September. And so he's now sort of having to go through some of the, I guess, emotional stuff that I did as I was rethinking this. But he tells me he's okay. And like me, we both had a similar situation as our story has come out. And that is that people are remarkably kind. And I thought people would be mean and say things like, well, God, you were awful gullible. But instead, they've had a lot of compassion for the story of these two little kids who were completely hijacked by this situation.
Wow. Is your book just out? Where is it available, Pauline?
Well, it's available in the larger retailers, Amazon and Chapters Indigo and I would assume independent bookstores as well in the U.S. It's available across North America.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, the title of the book is Run, Hide, Repeat, a memoir of a fugitive childhood. And after you've told your story, I look even more longingly at this wonderful photograph on the cover of you and your brother, both laughing, smiling. You're holding a can of soda pop. It's a priceless picture, and it just works so perfectly for the cover of this story, Pauline. Wow.
It was always one of my favorite pictures.
If you're looking for Pauline Dakin, her last name is D-A-K-I-N. Pauline, Run, Hide, Repeat. Pauline, nice to talk with you today. Boy, thanks for spending time with us here today.
David, thanks so much for your interest.
All right, and go Penguins and go Sidney Crosby.
Exactly.
Thank you.
We'll cheer from both sides of the border on that one.
Indeed we will. So long now.
Okay, bye now.
Talking with Pauline Dakin. in Canada. She lives in Nova Scotia now, by the way. In fact, she said early in the conversation that Sydney comes through town every once in a while with the Stanley Cup. I know he had it up there this summer. She said he lives right across the bay from where they are. Ever been there? I'd like to go there sometime. Yeah. Nova Scotia. Sounds like it's a long ways off, but it's really just north of Maine. I mean, you know. Not like going to Shikora, but not halfway around the world either. One of our sponsors, more to come on It's Your Turn, by the way. We're going to be talking about cancer on the next segment of the program. It'll be our final guest today. And her name is Laura Holmes Haddad. She herself is a cancer survivor, and she has become an advocate. And she has written a resource book for cancer survivors, caregivers, loved ones of those with cancer. It's really an incredibly it's a concise book, but it's packed with information. We'll talk to her about it coming up in just a couple of minutes here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. One of our sponsors on the program today, Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Have you tried them out yet? You don't have to get up there because I got a package that's got to go to some folks in New York. So I'm going to have them wrap it up for me. That's what they do. They package your items for shipping. You don't have to worry about the, you know, the right paper or the peanuts. What do I call those things? Peanuts. If you need packing or bubble wrap, they do it all. And you can ship it any way you want. FedEx, UPS, United States Postal Service. What a convenience. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Where are they? Just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex there. It's right behind Villa Grande and King's. Newcastle Road. We'll give you a phone number in a minute. You can give them a call. And if you need more information on what they offer, they do more than just package your items for shipping, although that's pretty important. They also have copying service available, scanning, faxing. You can rent a mailbox there. A lot of people need to do that temporarily. They have custom boxes. They have greeting cards. There's an official notary there. Sometimes you need something notarized before it goes out, right? You can even grab a lottery ticket while you're there. Here's the phone number for more info, 724-841-0044. 724-841-0044. Your friendly neighborhood shipping center, it's Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane, just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant. Another one of our sponsors, oh boy. Oh, boy, it's almost time to start thinking about the big holiday meals coming up, huh? Yeah. We're 2 weeks away from changing the clocks, folks. Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot on Jones Road offers all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens. Where do you find those these days? And a lot of people are looking for that. All-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens. Their birds are handled with extreme care. They are specifically fed non-GMO grain. That's genetically modified. No, none of that. They are specifically preservative-free. Their birds are specifically additive-free. They're all natural. And boy, does that make a difference in the taste. Oh, my. Jones Turkey Farm, Jones Road in Cabot. You can buy your turkey frozen if that's, you know, more convenient for you. Or you can get it fresh right before the big holiday meal if you'd prefer to do it that way. Your choice. The owner of Jones Turkey Farm is Dave Jones. And folks, he stakes his reputation on his turkey being the best in western Pennsylvania. I hope you'll take my word for it, but you ought to try one, really. Here's a phone number, 724-352-2450. They're in Cabot, 724-352-2450. You can order your turkey today, or you can visit online at jonesturkeyfarm.com to get more information and more information. Jones Turkey Farm, Jones Road in Cabot, quite simply the best. Going to be talking about cancer, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Laura Holmes Haddad. She is the author of a new book, a very compact but information-filled book called This Is Cancer, Everything You Need to Know, From the Waiting Room to the Bedroom. First of all, Laura Holmes Haddad, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been called by some reviewers the ultimate companion for patients, family members, and caregivers. You can speak firsthand. You're a cancer survivor, are you not, Laura?
I am. I was diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer in November 2012, and I am currently no evidence of disease. I've been off chemo since May 2015.
Wow.
Yes.
So when you were undergoing treatment, is that when you decided to write this book or later? Tell a little bit about that.
Sure. I was actually supposed to stay on chemo for the rest of my life indefinitely because of the type of cancer that I had and how aggressive it was. So it was about, I would say, late 2014 when I realized, you know, this is going to be my life. This is the new reality, and what do I want to do with it? Even though I didn't feel great, I knew I wanted to get back to what I had always done, which was write. And so that combined with all of the little details that my family and I didn't know about cancer, didn't know would be part of cancer, were so important for me to share. So I wrote out in chapter form, and This Is Cancer is the result.
You write, obviously we're talking about an extremely serious subject here, but you talk about the reality of it. You throw a little bit of humor in there once in a while, even a touch of flair, I dare say.
It, to me, is so important to let some light in, let some laughter in. As I like to say, it's when you're dealing with a diagnosis of cancer, it's a marathon, and there is just no way to keep on day after day, month after month, year after year without laughing, and especially at the absurdities of the medical system. You just have to sit back and say, we're just going to laugh a little bit.
What's the structure of your book, This Is Cancer? Can you tell our listeners, Laura, a little bit about that? How have you divided up the subject?
Yes, I was very deliberate. I arranged it by diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. And then in the back, there is a very comprehensive section of resources for all types of cancer, everything from how to cope with job loss and cancer, or fertility preservation, or a summer camp for kids whose parents have cancer. So all of these resources that make such a difference in a patient's life but aren't always discussed in the medical setting.
Mm-hmm. This could be a very important resource for caregivers and spouses as well. For example, let's just take one of the subjects you mentioned there. A marriage partner or a relationship partner could be the cancer survivor, or it could be the other partner. You talk at some length about how to manage a relationship or a marriage under these circumstances.
Yes, that was one thing that I never would have imagined would be, you know, anything but joyous and supportive as it always had been. But it takes a strain on your relationship, and your partner is, you know, as I call it, on this road trip. Your partner's on the road trip too, and so at some point, you know, they are processing their feelings about your illness, and they need a break. And so, and life goes on, right? The garbage still has to be taken out. The leaky faucet has to be fixed. And so those little things on top of cancer can be very frustrating and challenging.
What about some people are diagnosed with cancer at a very young life, young age in life, and they've got kids. You talk about how to parent with cancer in there. Expound on that a little bit, if you would, please.
Yes, this was is still a topic that's very dear to my heart, as so many younger people are being affected by a cancer diagnosis. Parenting while being sick is
obviously hard, but then when you're dealing with a life-threatening illness, it creates so many challenges, from who will watch the children while you're in treatment, or what if you have to travel for treatment, how will you handle that, and not only to mention, what do you say to your kids? You don't want to say too much, obviously, but then you don't want to say too little. It's just a minefield, and I found very few resources and very few people willing to talk about it. So it's something I write about at length.
You also have a chapter that's called Attitude. Obviously, you consider this very important if someone or someone you love is battling cancer.
Yes, and that gets brought up a lot. A lot of well-meaning people will say, oh, you know, keep going, and you have a great attitude, and you're going to beat it. But it's very frustrating when you're feeling all of the complicated emotions around cancer, such as fear, rage, anger, sadness, grief, and you're trying to deal with those things, and guilt, which I didn't expect to feel, guilt over creating, you know, such a chaos in your family and financial burden, and then just saying, let the patient feel their feelings. Their attitude will change, but we have to let them feel sad sometimes, and then they'll feel hopeful other times. But let's just be realistic about emotions during this road trip.
We're talking, listeners, with Laura Holmes Haddad. She is the author of a book. I mentioned this was a compact book. It's packed with information, but my guess is you planned it this way. This is small enough that you could pack it in a purse or a man bag or even a big pocket. It's about the size of a Reader's Digest, for example. I'm sure you planned it that way, didn't you? Take it with you.
Yes, my very smart publishing team set up the book size that way, and I'm thrilled. And as I joke, I mean, I could make this into a, you know, 10-pounder with all the information, but this is the compact guide to getting through cancer.
We'll take a quick break, listeners. We have a little bit more time to chat with Laura about her book, and we'll pick up our conversation with her here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
If you're a dog person, you know how much a dog means in your life. You know how your dog gives you unrestricted love and affection and joy. You also know that the dog can be so comforting at just the right time when you need to be comforted. That's why Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has O'Shea on their care team. O'Shea is there to provide the comfort and companionship that really helps, but she's only there at your request. Come in and meet O'Shea. You'll see why so many folks want her at the funeral. She creates a calming atmosphere. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, we've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and was recently honored to be named 2017 Family Business of the Year by the Pittsburgh Business Times. Check it out online at huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Across our network, Hunter will provide solutions for all your trucking needs.
Welcome back. This segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest chats with us by telephone today. She is Laura Holmes Haddad, author of This Is Cancer, Everything You Need to Know, From the Waiting Room to the Bedroom. From the waiting room, a lot of waiting around at the beginning of a cancer diagnosis, is there not, Laura?
Yes, that is the number one thing I can say. There is a lot of wait is the true test of patience. And the next thing I say is pack something to do, because there is no avoiding the waiting.
What about changes that occur in your body? Now, I believe that you underwent a treatment, did you not, whenever you were battling?
I did. Unfortunately, the first round of actually first two rounds of chemotherapy failed to shrink my tumor. The tumor was actually growing despite the chemo. So at that point, my only option was to try a clinical trial drug that was given with two other chemo drugs. And this was a stage one extension, phase two trial. And the protocol worked for me in 6 months, and I was very, very lucky to get in on that trial. Like all cancer patients, I suffered, but it was ultimately worth it. It did its job. It shrunk my tumor. Hmm.
And you devote a chapter in your book to clinical trials, the names, the words you need to know. Most people would have no idea about this.
Yes, I had absolutely no idea about clinical trials in the beginning. I actually remember saying, I don't want to be a guinea pig. I don't want to have anything experimental. And then 4 weeks later, I was begging to get into one. So it's really important with clinical trials to educate yourself. And I really didn't understand how crucial trials are in developing new treatments and how much the scientists and drug development teams need patients, obviously, to participate. And it was by educating myself and really understanding that all the elements about it that I was able to come to terms with it and realize this is something I want to do, this is something I need to do.
Most people, I don't know, everybody would realize that under most forms of chemotherapy, a cancer survivor is going to lose her or his hair. That's going to happen. But there are other changes that people might not be familiar with. For example, you talk about this, sometimes it's harder to sleep, right?
Yes, sleep becomes a very, very challenging part of your life. And it's at some point, all you want to do is sleep, but the chemicals from some of the chemo agents, at least for me, led to very severe insomnia, which, as anyone knows who is sleep deprived, it just makes you feel worse. Other changes can be weight gain. Some people lose a lot of weight. Most people think of cancer patients as very skinny, but most oftentimes you gain weight. I gained 30 pounds just in the fluids and everything going on with my body. In addition, you can have things like dry eye and dry mouth and mouth sores. So it's really, sadly, your whole body is affected, not just the cancer cells.
Are there hormonal changes that sometimes come with cancer treatment?
Yes, of course, with women and breast cancer or other gynecological cancers, can really wreak havoc on your hormones, particularly if you have your ovaries removed. And for me, for example, when I had my ovaries and my fallopian tubes removed, I woke up in what is called medically induced menopause. And so that's early menopause, and it's a little more severe than a naturally occurring menopause. So hot flashes and night sweats and all those good things. Those happen, and that is just another thing to throw in the cancer world. It's another side effect for patients.
You have another topic, and I think you actually mentioned this earlier in our conversation, but maybe we can talk on it a little bit more. Fertility preservation. This would be something that you might want to consider with certain cancers.
Yes, and again, now that cancer is affecting more younger women of childbearing age, this is a very important topic that most often gets discussed too late. So the number one thing that I've heard from physicians is to talk about it right in the beginning, right when you're diagnosed, because you can often freeze your eggs, or with men, freeze sperm. There are other methods to keeping your options open for having children, but you need to do it most of the time before treatment starts. So it's really important to bring it up and then see a physician that specializes in fertility preservation for oncology patients.
I'm jumping around a little bit and truncating here, of course, in the interest of time, but You have some very fascinating chapters, one entitled The Language of Cancer, in other words, talking points, oversharing, what to say and what not to say to a cancer survivor. Equally important, I should guess.
Yes, and I admit I am guilty of this. I was guilty of it before I got sick. I didn't know what to say to people who are going through, you know, horrible, horrible things. And so I either said the wrong thing or I was silent. And that those are the reactions I got when I was diagnosed. And so I really felt compelled to write about it, to say, you know, try to choose your words carefully. And then also, if you don't know what to say, just write a note or say to the patient, I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. Those words can be so comforting, other than just backing away, or in a lot of cases, people just avoid you, and that can be obviously emotionally very hard to cope with.
Mm-hmm. Can you, listeners, how about these questions? Can you work out? Can you exercise when you're undergoing treatment? Can you go away for a while? You discussed that in another chapter, Laura.
Yes, so exercise is so important for avoiding recurrence of cancer. And then during treatment, you obviously want to keep oxygen flowing. I mean, obviously discuss this with your doctor. It depends on what sort of treatment you're getting. But I tried to at least walk, I shuffled rather, to my mailbox every day and just try to move around. I know some people feel like running and jogging, but I wasn't up for that. I could just walk. And then I love to swim. I couldn't swim because of the port that was inserted to administer chemotherapy. But it's just important to keep moving. The other thing is you can travel. Again, talk to your doctor depending on your specific diagnosis, but you have to be very careful. You have to plan ahead. You have to travel with a letter describing the medications you're on. You have to be, you know, obviously, be able to access a medical clinic should you need something. So you just have to plan ahead and be mindful.
Are there intimacy issues or problems that sometimes or often crop up?
Yes, and this is another subject people don't want to talk about, but it's so important. I think it affects every type of cancer patient. You obviously, you're sick. You don't feel like being intimate. A lot of the time, a patient is in pain, and so being physically touched is too difficult. And that can obviously lead to frustration, and especially if it's months or years. And then there are physical changes often that prevent intimacy. So it's just really important to talk about it instead of sitting in silence. Even if you can just hold hands with your partner, that can sometimes be enough to carry you through, or seek, in my case, I think it's so great to see counseling. Oftentimes a counselor can really help you bridge that gap that might have occurred.
Nurses. Here's another subject. Who knows about this going in? There are good nurses. There are very good nurses. There are bad nurses. There are nurses all the way in between. You have to know about this, right?
Yes, and I should start with I love nurses. I respect what they do so, so profoundly. But as a patient, there are grumpy nurses. There are cheerful nurses. There are in-the-middle nurses. And there are so many different types, and that's what I had no idea. There are, you know, clinical trial nurses, and there are nurses that just work in hospitals rather than oncology clinics. And so I think it's good to be aware of everyone's role and to be respectful and thankful. And I always try to bring in like cookies or popcorn or some little treat because they work very long hours. At the same time, you know, you need to be very clear and communicate what's going on with your body and stand up for yourself in the medical situation.
Our listeners, our guest, Laura Holmes Haddad, is a Renaissance woman. She has studied in a wide variety of areas, majored in comparative government when she was in school. She was in California Culinary Academy. Became an assistant cookbook editor at Simon & Schuster. And as she said, her first love was and remains writing. You're also a patient advocate. Do you, like, I don't know, go to conferences or speak around the country or something like that, Laura?
All of the above. I've had the opportunity, now that I'm feeling better and have more energy, to attend conferences, meet other patients, which has just been so incredible and mind-blowing to hear everyone's stories. At the same time, I'm very interested in policy. I actually got the opportunity to represent the patient voice about clinical drug trial access to then-Vice President Biden at his cancer moonshot visit in San Francisco. And that was so important on so many levels of really having everyone at that roundtable understand how important the trials are, but yet the barriers to trial access. So I'm loving being able to speak out and being able to get back out in the world. It's been really filled me back up.
Our time is about gone, listeners. There's much more in this book. As I said, it's small in size. You could put it in a large pocket, but still it's almost 370 pages. It's packed with information. Heck, there's even sample medication charts in here. There are sample questions for you to ask your oncologist. There's a sample patient cheat sheet, all sorts of things in here. The book is just newly published, right? It's paperback. It's just out, Laura?
Yes, it is. And it's also available as an ebook and as well as an audio format on compact disc.
This is Cancer, Everything You Need to Know from the Waiting Room to the Bedroom by Laura Holmes Haddad. She's been our guest here for the last few minutes on It's Your Turn. Laura, nice to meet you. Thanks for spending time with us here today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 9595. The pick 3, 623, 623. The pick 4, 3686. The pick 5, 09755. Wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt, 7, 12, 13, 14, and 21. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $80,000.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. We thank our guests today. We just chatted with Laura Holmes Haddad earlier. Pauline Dakin, a fascinating story of a childhood on the run in Canada. Strange, but true. Coming up on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, it's a book talk day. We do this once a month, usually on the fourth Monday. Sometimes that gets changed around due to a holiday, but generally it's the fourth Monday. Slippery Rock Community Library has selected for discussion a newer novel by Sherry LaPina. It's called The Couple Next Door. A baby goes missing. My young married guy, that's a little baby, goes missing. And you can imagine the consternation, the fear, and so on and so forth. Also on the Monday program, the Pittsburgh Philharmonic is coming to Butler. They're going to be, I think it's their first concert of the year. Yeah, first concert of the year at Suckup Theater. They've made Suckup Theater their northern home. So I'll tell you the details about that. That'll be coming up in the very near future. All of that on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. It's gorgeous out there. Temperature already up to 71 degrees. We'll see you Monday, 12:30, on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR 680 in Butler.
This is Butler's Hometown Radio.